From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, it's called The Dark Ecstasy. Oh, whatever that means. Get ready for that. Happy birthday, by the way, to Coast listener Liz Grenier from Connecticut. Good to have you with us, Liz. Thank you, and have a great birthday. Here's what's happening. Something big has happened in China. China has now sent a team of military chemical experts to the northern city of Tianjin after explosions now that we reported on last night have killed at least 50 people. The blast that occurred late Wednesday night ripped through an industrial port area, destroying buildings, shipping containers, thousands of new cars that were there. It is not known what caused the blast, nor whether chemicals have leaked. More than 3,500 residents are spending the night in temporary shelters, and hundreds are injured, 71 critically. Something very weird has happened. Were they building some kind of weapon, and it blew up? Who knows? Three people hospitalized when the ceiling of a Minneapolis nightclub partially collapsed on them. A 30 by 30 foot section of what is called the First Avenue venue gave way. The collapse is the band Theory of a Dead Man was performing. Ironic there. The United States believes Islamic State militants likely used mustard gas in an attack on Kurdish forces in Iraq earlier this week. The first indication that the militant group has obtained a banned chemical weapon. That's dangerous stuff. Fidel Castro marking his 89th birthday by insisting that the United States owes Cuba many millions of dollars because of the half-century-old American trade embargo. Jerome Corsi, of course, noted author. Is he right, Jerry?
Well, I think Castro is clearly resentful of the trade embargo and wanting to cash in. Even at 89 years old, I think Castro sees an economic opportunity in the normalization of relations. I think, George, we better get down there and interview him pretty soon.
I know it. I'm working on my side. You're working on yours. As a matter of fact, Jerry, I'm going to be getting to you my contacts so you guys can put it together for us.
Well, WND is very anxious to go do this, and we're going to make every effort possible, George, to go with you to interview Fidel Castro. I think we've got to do it quickly, and with the normalization of relationships, maybe we have an opportunity to do it. We're going to try.
We sure will. But back to Castro for a moment. I mean, he wants money. There's no question about that. You know, is he entitled to some?
Well, I think that's a very difficult question, George. I mean, the sorting out the rights and wrongs of Cuba is going to be very difficult. I mean, the number of dissidents who are still repressed, the anger of the Cuban community in Miami over the suppression of rights, the really the abject poverty that's been the case under socialism in Cuba, all of these are issues which you can say, you know, look, Castro has been a repressive socialist regime. At the same time, the trade embargo that we impose has been very retributive on Cuba and has caused economic pain. So maybe the normalization of relationships has the promise of the passing of the Castro era and an improvement both in freedom for the people of Cuba and an improvement of economic trade. But I doubt if reparations over the trade embargo are realistic or unlikely to be paid by the United States.
All right, Jerry, and I'll be back in touch with you really soon about our plans to try to go down to Cuba and interview Fidel Castro.
Look forward to it, George. Thank you.
Be well. Jerry Corsi writes for WND.com. In Florida, deputies arrested a woman that they say had nearly two dozen cats in a storage unit with deplorable conditions. If you're going to have a pet or pets, take care of them. Amy Lynn Dvorak, 43 years old, was charged with multiple counts of animal cruelty. A North Carolina man pleaded guilty to charges that he brought counterfeit chips to an Atlantic City, New Jersey poker tournament in a scheme discovered after he flushed $2.7 million of the chips down a toilet in his hotel room. He could face 5 years in prison, sentenced The crimes are unbelievable, pleading guilty to trademark counterfeiting, but they're going to put him away for a long time. The reason why that intelligent people tend to live longer, listen to this, is primarily due to an individual's genes, according to new research. How about that? And I don't mean the genes that you're wearing either. Researchers found that about 95% of the link between intelligence and longevity can be explained by genetic influences on both traits. How about that? And they say listening to music is the greatest thing in the world to heal. Matter of fact, the lead author of the study, Catherine Meads, listened to this song, Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, and said it soothed her pain 3 hours after hip surgery. But they say listening to music during and after an operation can help reduce pain. Researchers at the Queen Mary University of London said patients who had listened to music had less anxiousness after their surgery. They needed less pain relief. They recommend that you bring headsets and your music just before surgery. What else is going on in the skies these days? It's time to check in with our friend Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what's going on this week?
Well, good evening, George. And I gather both of us are going to be on the road this weekend.
Oh, my gosh. I'm in Edinburgh, Texas, and I'm everywhere.
I'm back in Oregon, down in Albany, Oregon, for a family wedding this weekend, and looking forward to it. I'd just like to start things off by wishing Harrison and Jacqueline a successful and long and happy marriage. I know some of the wedding party are listening, tuned in to Coast tonight, and I just thought I'd wish them well sure. in this upcoming event. I'm traveling, so I'm going to, if I may, give sort of a truncated report tonight.
That's okay, Pete. Go ahead.
A couple very, very interesting reports, George. last Sunday night, over Minneapolis-St. Paul area, specifically over Lake Minnetonka, which is right on the edge of Minneapolis, Excelsior, and the city of Minnetonka, there was a very, very interesting-looking display of lights at about 10:30 p.m. Again, this is last Sunday, the 9th of August. We just posted the report and posted some of the photographs of what people allegedly saw. Those lights hovered in the night sky, some people claim, for up to an hour. And when they finally faded, people claim, some witnesses claim they could see bright lights above what was almost solid overcast. I invite the Coast listeners to take a look at those photos. If anybody can tell me what the cause of them was, I would welcome an email or an actual report using our online report form. We'd like to lay this one to rest if we could. The next night, an equally interesting sighting from Hartford, Alabama, about 7:13 p.m., a gentleman with very impressive credentials was standing outside, and he witnessed an airliner pass overhead, generating a condensation trail, a contrail behind it. To his great amazement, he saw a triangular object suddenly accelerate and begin tracking the airliner. He quickly called his wife out. She saw it. They called their son, who lives about 6 or 8 blocks away from them. He saw not only the original triangle, but two more behind the first one. Very interesting report, and we link to it from our homepage so people can read that report. The source of the report, very highly qualified, former military, probably very reliable and a good witness to boot. And the last report came, I believe, from the night after the report in Alabama. Gentlemen, very close to Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. You and I have been through it God only knows how many times.
I'm going to be there tomorrow, as a matter of fact, going to Edinburgh.
Guy who's a former pilot saw a cluster of 8 lights. He thinks they were actually in the Class B airspace, the area around that airport. We have yet to receive a written report from him, but it should be posted the next time we update the website. We just posted 168 new reports we've received since last week, so a lot of good reading material there, and I invite the Coast listeners to keep their eyes open.
All right, Peter. And Peter's website, of course, UFOCenter.com. Did you know about 10% of the world's population is believed to be left-handed? Higher percentages of artists, professors, recent U.S. presidents have been southpaws. Now, in the old days, they thought if you were left-handed, you were evil. But it's been a tough row to hoe, isn't it, for left-handed people? Scissors, everything. And years ago, they never made anything for left-handed people. But now they're starting to. I think one day, on a Friday, we'll do some open lines with just left-handed people and see how life is for them, at least for a little bit. All right, in a moment, we're going to be talking about the occult in rituals. Get ready for that on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. An elderly mother and her two sons in Florida were found dead in their home several weeks ago, said to have been the victims of a ritualistic murder coinciding with the blue moon that we had. At a news conference, the sheriff there, Sheriff Morgan, said investigators have interviewed a person of interest in the case known to practice what the sheriff described as witchcraft, a positioning of the victims' bodies, leading investigators to believe the murders were part of a ritual. This seems to be happening all over the place. Our special guest for the next couple hours is Michelle Belanger. She works as a psychic medium. She's been on with me before, some time ago, 6 years. She's also an expert on psychic vampires. She can be seen on numerous programs on A&E, History Channel, HBO. She has had extraordinary experiences of her entire life on her own. Some of her books, Conspiracy of Angels, Ghost Hunter's Guide to the Occult, The Dictionary of Demons. Here is Michelle on Coast to Coast. Welcome back after a long absence.
I have missed you. Missed you when you were down out here in Kent, Ohio, actually,
yeah,
for the little paranormal fest.
That was quick. How have you been?
I've been doing good, focusing on writing, getting back into where everything started for me.
Well, good for you, Michelle. Hey, this story that we just had about this horrible ritualistic murder, this seems to be very prevalent around the country, isn't it?
Well, the problem with it is a question of whether or not ritual crime is prevalent or the perception of it as ritual crime is prevalent. There are a lot of issues with the case that David Morgan, Sheriff David Morgan in Escambia County, makes as far as the murders there. Now, the murders are terrible. These three people were not merely bludgeoned to death with a claw hammer, but their throats were slit, and the one of them was also shot in the ear, supposedly when he was coming into the house. Now, the whole thing came to my attention because of allegation that witchcraft was part of it. And I'm very curious as to how Sheriff David Morgan came to the conclusion, because we've got a lot of ideas of what constitutes witchcraft and occult crime, but many of them do not have anything to do with the actual practices of witchcraft groups or occult practitioners. So I'm interested in asking questions, the hard questions. Is this a practice that occurs? And if so, how do we accurately identify it?
Yeah, because
go ahead.
He was saying the positioning of the bodies had a lot to do with it. I don't know if that's the case or not.
He also, the reasons that he said witchcraft was afoot with this particular instance, is body positioning, but also blunt force trauma as a method that he identified as somehow occult in the way in which the people were killed. The implication was also that the claw hammer was used as a ritual tool. Most of that has nothing to do with any known occult practice. He tied the murders to the blue moon, although the actual killings occurred Tuesday of that week, and the dead people were discovered on the night of the blue moon. But there's no occult ritual that is intended to use murder in conjunction with a blue moon, especially not when we're talking like witchcraft. I mean, Wiccan groups, and he originally identified the practice as Wicca.
And he was wrong there.
Wicca, that's so far off the mark. I mean, what Wiccans are going to be doing in the night of the blue moon is pretty much standing in a circle, calling down the moon, which is really just a way of connecting with the energy, the lunar energy, that they anthropomorphize as a goddess. And it's, well, it's a whole lot of peace, love, and granola, to be honest with you.
Well, I think so. And, you know, I have found, Michelle, interviewing a number of Wiccans or witches, that they are God-loving people. They believe in a male-female gender of God, but they don't have any evil within them at all.
A lot of their beliefs, if we take away the word witch, really stand, they line up very nicely with most good Christians and most good, upstanding, God-fearing people. They believe in a higher power, whether they call it a god or a goddess, is almost immaterial, because at the end of the day, their main code of ethics is about "and it harm none." And that's why Sheriff David Morgan's idea that this was Wicca, somehow tied to a Wiccan murder, really kind of like threw me.
Could this be more of someone who may be worshiping the devil or Satan?
Given where they're at, and a secondary suggestion, he called another press conference after a lot of outcry occurred, especially among Wiccan elders, like the Lady Liberty League from Circle Network News and Circle Sanctuary, and suggested that the people were killed with the intent of taking items off of them for some sort of ritual later. Now, that reminded me of certain practices, Santeria, voodoo, different things from the African diaspora. Now, let me say first that the vast majority of practitioners with those, much like Wiccans, are not going to run out and kill people in order to get their spell components. That's simply not a part of their faith. However, given the location, it did make me wonder why that wasn't brought up in addition to the idea of witchcraft, because those rituals do sometimes involve blood and animal sacrifice. And while human sacrifice is pretty well unheard of, if somebody were kind of going to go around the bend with a belief or a practice, I could see a little better argument for something connected with Candomblé, Payo Mayombe, or Santeria, possibly. Now, Satanism, that's a whole nother kettle of fish.
It sure is. And I think it's pretty darn evil. What do you think?
It depends on the type of Satanist you're talking about, because if we're talking Levian Satanism, they use the name Satan really more as a political statement than anything else. So they're not the sorts who are going to go running around in the woods, cavorting with goats and committing sacrifices or even vandalistic acts. Levian Satanists, it's more a philosophy of the self, and they adopt the idea of Satan or Lucifer in his role of the very first rebel. It's much more of an intellectual movement. Now, theistic Satanists, the idea that people actually worship the embodiment of evil, you know, the ultimate bad guy, those sorts are unpredictable, because there's no real community. There's no real way of setting that as a standard. People who believe that they are worshiping Satan as the big bad pretty much cobble together their own beliefs and are usually digging that stuff out of the same sort of negative witchcraft books and old magical grimoires that people like Sheriff David Morgan are also drawing their idea of what a witch actually is. Stuff that's very outdated, very based in folklore, based in the witch craze from the 1600s, the 1500s, back in medieval and Renaissance Europe.
There's a case that occurred 22 years ago, Michelle. I want to talk with you about that when we come back in a moment, called the West Memphis Three. That had to do with a case in West Memphis, Arkansas, where three boys were killed, three other young people were arrested and charged, and I think they've since been released with the time served. We'll get into that in a moment. That, too, is an incredible story, because the prosecutor said that had something to do with some kind of satanic ritual. We'll be back in a moment with Michelle Belanger, and her work, of course, and her website linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Ironically, a few weeks ago, Damien Eccles was scheduled to be one of our guests on Coast to Coast over the weekend and canceled with about an hour to go. He was one of those tried and convicted in the death of the boys in the West Memphis, Arkansas case, since been released as well. Michelle is back with us, Belanger. Michelle, this is another strange case where the prosecution claimed it was a satanic ritual.
Yeah, and I see a lot of parallels with what the sheriff in Pensacola, Florida, had jumped to conclusions with that we see also in the West Memphis 3 case. You've got Damien Eccles, Jason Miskelly Jr., and Jason Baldwin, who were all kids themselves. They were all teens. And Damien, at the time, he listened to heavy metal music. He wore all black. He definitely was dabbling and studying various occult and supernatural things. Although, some days I wonder, with what we call a cult from the wrong side of the way looking at it, is the same stuff that most people who are paranormal investigators are also interested in studying. So long story short, Damien was already a person of interest for one of the local law enforcement based on nothing so much as his interests and the fact that this fellow was a firm believer that if you are listening to heavy metal music, clearly those records play backwards and they are going to tell you to go worship Satan. It was part of the satanic panic, which was a whole lot of hysteria in the 80s and 90s. Three 8-year-old boys were brutally, horribly murdered. And Damien and the other two were the ones who took the fall for what, in my opinion, remains an unsolved case, and a tragically unsolved case, because whoever did the truly atrocious things to those three boys got away scot-free, and three other young men lost 20 years of their lives.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. And that is where the tragedy begins. What's even sicker, Michelle, is whoever killed those three are on the loose. I'm assuming they're still alive, whether it was one individual or several. And who knows if they've not continued their heinous crimes.
And playing misdirect and aiming the direction toward other people. I mean, it's easy to look askance at someone who doesn't look like you, doesn't dress like you, and doesn't, you know, call God by the same name as you. It's sort of a problem that we have culture-wide currently. We're in a global society, and we're not all alike, and we don't all see eye to eye. And because we don't all understand one another, it's easy to fear. And it's easy to have instances create a need to have scapegoats, a need to give in to that fear. And I'd love to say that it's an isolated incident, what happened with Damien and the West Memphis 3, what I believe is happening down in Pensacola, Florida. But there's a deeper problem at hand, which is to say law enforcement, they are only as good as their training. They're only going to know as much as they have been taught. And as much as I personally would like to say, well, you know, clearly Sheriff Morgan is just mistaken with his assessment, in going through textbooks, current textbooks that are used to train law enforcement officials, the information they have on what constitutes occult crime and ritual abuse is terribly, terribly out of date and simply wrong in many places. I mean, there's a fan passed along portions of one of their books from their college course that they took just within the past 2 years. The book is called Criminal Investigation, 9th edition by Cengage. And among other things, it cites stoners, which, if you know, they're people who listen to metal music and probably smoke a little bit too much weed, stoners as an occult gang who cite them as people who engage in ritual abuse as kind of like a gateway drug to running around and torturing cats and killing people. They've got a list of items for police to look for when they search a home as evidence of occult activity. And that list includes crystals, pillows, of all darn things, pretty much things that you and I are going to have in our house. Drapery that is dark, things that are black or red in color. Actually, they've got a whole list of colors, and it doesn't really exclude any part of the palette. You know, hearts are also listed as a sign of occult activity. They are an occult image, a heart of all things. So seeing this at the core in the textbooks and what people are being taught, we've got a real problem, because you can't deal with a crime. You can't really find who's behind it if you have no clue how to assess the situation.
Well, you know, Michelle, there's no question that most police departments aren't set up properly to handle this kind of bizarre behavior and activity. I would assume in some cases they either have to go to the FBI or the state might have some experts somewhere, but I don't think they're set up to do it by themselves, are they?
No, there are very few occult experts who work in law enforcement, and most of the ones that I know tend to be retired police officers. Detective Charles Ennis in Canada, who writes under the pen name Kerr Cahullan, but also under his name Charles Ennis, has written a couple of law enforcement guides on witchcraft, Wicca, paganism, hoping to educate. But there's really a dearth of reliable instructors and reliable experts that can be tapped and that are trusted and seen as trusted quantities. I have a friend who worked with the investigator of the Susan Walsh disappearance in New York City back in 1996. There was a big hullabaloo because she was investigating the vampire community in New York at the time. She had previously done an expose on the Russian mafia, but not a whole lot of interest was paid to that in connection to her disappearance.
See, that's probably so what did her in.
Well, and that's kind of the thing with what's going on in Pensacola. Witchcraft is getting tossed around a whole lot, but Richard Thomas Smith worked for the Department of Homeland Security, and it was actually his absence at work that alerted them to his death and the death of his brother and his mother. And I really wonder what smokescreen is getting put up and who's behind the smokescreen.
And why? Why are they trying to hide it? Michelle, Gina, our producer tonight, has Damian Eccles' phone number and has put in a call to him. So if he joins us, I'd love for you to join me in chatting with him.
Tell her to let him know it's me.
Okay.
He and I talk kind of all the time.
Okay. She will do that. And that would be an interesting thing. Is he bitter?
No, he's really not.
I would be.
He is so much healthier emotionally than I would ever expect. He spent a good 10 years in solitary confinement, and he went through H-E double hockey.
You can say that word on the show. That's about the worst you could say, but you can get by with that.
I'm never sure. The FCC can be very...
I know. It's always better to err on the side of caution.
Yes, I err on the side of fiddlesticks. No, Damien is really... He translates a lot of the scarring, a lot of the bitterness. He puts it into art. He puts it into creative things. He puts it into trying to make change. He's spoken in front of the United Nations on the way that we treat prisoners, on the idea of capital punishment, and he does a lot of education about this whole concept of occult crime and ritual crime and whether or not it actually exists and how we would need to change the education of law enforcement to identify real threats as opposed to perceived threats.
How old was he when he got convicted?
17, I think.
So he lost his entire youth.
Yeah.
It was gone.
Yeah, his 20 years, 20 years of his life, he had to reacquaint himself with how the world works. I mean, think about how much has changed in those two decades.
Did he get any kind of remuneration from the state?
My understanding of the plea that they were more or less railroaded into submitting, there wasn't a whole lot of, hey, we're really sorry. It's an Alford plea, and it was based off of new genetic material that they, well, it's not that they found it at the site, it's that they reassessed the evidence that they kind of ran roughshod over, because they were really, really sure that they had found the people who killed the boys, and they kind of went case closed from there.
Yeah.
And this actually is my big problem with the erroneous assessment of what is a cult or ritual crime, because suddenly it blinds people to keeping an open mind on all of the evidence.
Sure.
Well,
we're saying that these three did not do it. They were because of a plea bargain afterwards. They just wanted out, and they got out. 10 years served. But was the crime itself a satanic ritual murder of these three young boys?
Well, the one thing that is certain is sexual sadism played some role in the murders. Horrible stuff done to the boys, extensive horrible stuff. The question of whether or not that was intended to be a ritual or satanic is up in the air. I mean, I think it depends on what your idea of satanically inspired acts is.
I think it was just sick individual.
Yeah, I really think... You know, if I'm going to armchair detective it, I really think that you've got someone who is just purely evil doing horrible things. And while in serial killer cases, you will see ritualized behavior, and you will even see people take items and trophies, often pieces of bodies, which can give the impression of a satanic ritual.
That's true.
It's a ritual that has no more meaning to anyone but the person doing it. It's their own way of looking at the world, their own way of ordering their internal evil.
Do you think the murderer or murderers are serial killers?
I think that there's a possibility based on the method that the three boys who were murdered in West Memphis, Arkansas, I think that there's a possibility that somebody who would do it again and possibly has done
and
it
possibly
again.
Has.
And possibly got smart about hiding the way they do it.
What amazes me of some of these people, Michelle, that they can live among us and we don't even know it, and we don't know who they are.
I think that's the worst part about it. You know, the kid who dresses in black and is, you know, rocking out to Ozzy Osbourne and doing, you know, putting crazy posters in his room is far less likely. I mean, he's an easy target to point at and say this kid's disturbed. The ones that are really dangerous are the ones who look like everybody else, who go to work and do all of their civic duties, and then behind that very polite mask is a monster, is true evil.
True evil indeed. Where does that end? At what point does all this craziness stop?
I don't know. I mean, you've been watching the news. I've been watching the news. The world's gone mad. I mean, we're at each other's throats on the streets over our differences, over our beliefs, over the color of our skin. I mean, everything seems to be coming up violence. And I, like everybody else, I struggle for some reason, some explanation for why there's so much unrest, so much malcontent among people. Why we keep lashing out with one another, why the gun violence, why the knife violence, why people just wander up to movie theaters and just decide that it's a great idea to shoot the place up. I mean, I have no explanation.
It's unbelievable, Michelle. It really is. So what are you working on these days?
Well, partly after writing the Dictionary of Demons and immersing myself in hardcore research of grimoires and reading, you know, Latin texts in German block print from the 15th century, I wanted to take a break. And so I've launched into a fiction series that draws on all of the other stuff and lets me tell stories and kind of what ifs of...
And make up your own endings and scenarios, huh?
Yeah, and explore some of the ways that I would like people to investigate a cult and ritual crime, some of the applications I'd like to see people put psychics to, and so, you know, crafting a world that is just one step off from ours, and where, you know, the bad guys are pretty obviously bad guys, and the good guys do win in the end, because that's something that I'm missing right now in the regular world.
The question I haven't asked you yet, based on talking about satanic rituals, and it seems like in several of the cases we've just talked about, though it was suspect, it's not the case. Are there truly horrendous satanic ritual crimes?
Are there cults that actively engage in it? I lean toward no on that case. Are there individuals who are so inspired in a twisted way by the iconography of satanic abuse, of the sort of stuff that the media kind of perpetuates with the idea of like the satanic panic and stuff? Yes, there are individuals who get so fixated on that that is something that they act out as part of their psychosis, as part of their sickness. And the important thing with the symbols that they're going to use for stuff like that is understanding where they came to those symbols, like how they learned about them, and you know exactly what their background is. It's much more likely to encounter someone who's delved that far into satanic iconography that they came from a Christian background, because you kind of can't have that idea of Satan without the idea of the war in heaven and, you know, the sons of light versus the sons of darkness. And that's very much a Christian mythological idea. And so religious extremism is almost always in their background.
You know, Hitler loved the occult, and he was one whacked out individual, wasn't he?
Oh, he got really strange about some of his ideas. I mean, him with his astrologers, the rituals that allegedly were carried out at, I believe, Wellwisburg Castle, the attempt to, through sex magic, incarnate the souls of old Teutonic warriors. There was just some really crazy stuff going on there.
He was doing everything he could to win the war, wasn't he?
Well, he was, and the Nazi Party, some of their origins go back to like the Tullerbruderschaft and secret societies, occult societies, the German underground, the cabaret scene and the occult underworld at that time produced, you know, people who, like in modern day, practice in a way that is perfectly, you know, legitimate and non-harmful, like the modern Wiccans, and then a few people who just take it to a really, really dark place. And certainly the Nazis took it not just to the dark place, but like all the way down to the end zone and out of the ballpark.
All right, when we come back, Michelle, we're going to take phone calls with you, and I'd like to talk a little bit about your book, The Dictionary of Demons, as well. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.